It's happy birthday.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike gives you a chance to test your knowledge against that of four know-it-alls. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please continues on its carefree way without benefit, as you know, of the slightest rehearsal or preparation. Now, this time we have with us that good old combination, Franklin P. Adams, lyrist and creator of the Conning Tower, and John Kieran, tower of strength in the sports, birds, and bees division. Our guests are first our old friend, the music critic and composer, Dean Taylor, and the co-author of Life with Father and co-producer of Arsenic and Old Lace, that eminent maestro, Mr. Russell Krauss. Remember, each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question coming to us from Frank Garrett of Chicago. Get 2 out of 3 on this, gentlemen. This is very easy. I hesitate even to throw it before you lions. Name a famous pair consisting of a tall man and a short one. The first pair would be one you find in comic strips.
Too easy. Mr. Krauss.
Mutt and Jeff.
Very good.
You want to retire for the rest of the evening, Mr.
Krauss? I would be very pleased to go home now.
What have you got home?
I can listen to this.
A tall man and a short one in history. In American history. Famous pair. Mr. Kieran.
Lincoln and Douglas.
Lincoln and Douglas. Yes, that's very good. Mr. Adams, were you going to name the same?
Name the same.
I don't think of any other two offhand. That would be the pair we'd think of. Now, a pair among old-time vaudevillians. Mr. Krauss.
Weber and Fields.
Say you're very good, Mr. Krauss.
This is your evening. I still want to go home.
Man's crazy about his home. The next one from Bernard Sable of Philadelphia. Get 2 out of 3 on this. This gets harder. Name the... This is about concealments. Name the play or movie in which a head is concealed in a hat case. Mr. Krauss.
Was the play with Emlyn Williams. If you'll give me just a half a second, I'll give you the...
A half second's over.
All right.
Mr. Adams?
There shall be no night.
No.
Night must fall. Night must fall. That was the one you meant, Mr. Krauss.
That's the one.
That's the one you meant, Mr. Adams. You just have a funny way of phrasing it, that's all. I'm going to give you credit for that, Mr. Krauss, because I could tell that look in your eye was one of complete honesty. Nay, what are you laughing at?
Well, I'm the one that answered the question.
That's complete honesty.
Isn't it, though? And modesty, too. Name the play or movie in which a machine gun is concealed in a violin case. A machine gun concealed in a violin case. Mr. Krauss.
Anything goes.
Very good, Mr. Krauss. What a mind you have, Mr. Krauss.
Mm-hmm.
Still want to go home?
Stick around.
I wanted to go home when I saw that show.
No offense.
Mr. Adams. Name the play or movie in which $23,000 is concealed, or concealed, are concealed in a briefcase. $23,000. Is or are concealed in a briefcase. Well, we're all right. We've got 2 out of 3. The answer is the play Watch on the Rhine. The chief character, the anti-fascist in this play, has gathered this sum to carry on the fight against fascism. Remember it now, gentlemen? You've probably all seen the play. That's 2 out of 3, which sends us sailing on to the next one from Paul Gould of New York City, a 3 out of 4 question. Gentlemen, which of these characters of fiction are pure invention and which are based on real persons? Is that clear, Mr. Adams? The first is Cyrano de Bergerac, fiction or based on a real person? Mr. Taylor.
Based on a real person.
Yes. What was the name of the real person?
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Atom boy. When did he live, Mr. Taylor?
Oh, quite a while ago.
Yes. I don't want to pin you down.
Well, I should say...
1500 and something.
1500 say, and about 200 years more.
I'd say 17th century.
17th century is right. 1620 to 1655. Do you know, Mr. Taylor, whether the real Cyrano de Bergerac had as long a nose as Rostand's invented character?
Not quite as long, but he had a nose.
He had a long nose, yes. And he fought and wrote
and
died.
He wrote about a voyage to the moon.
He did indeed. Called Voyage to the Moon, I think.
Oh, why not? Why,
it's just coincidence. Now, how about Lothario? Invention or a real person? Lothario.
He was gay, wasn't he?
Yes, the first initial gay.
Gay Young.
Gay Young.
G.Y. Lothario.
Mr. Krause?
G.Y. Lothario. I was just identifying.
G.Y., yes. Now, who will guess as to whether it's an invented or a real character?
Invented.
That's right, Mr. Adams. Was that a guess?
Entirely.
He is an invented character. If you want to look him up, you'll find him in an old Elizabethan or pre-Elizabethan play called The Fair Penitent by a man named Rowe, R-O-W-E. Practically forgotten except on this program. That gives us 2 out of 2 owing to Mr. Adams' guessing ability. How about this one? Ben-Hur. Real or invented? Ben-Hur. Mr. Taylor.
Oh, invented.
Yes, invented. Where do you find him invented?
In the novel Ben-Hur by General Lew Wallace.
That's quite right, yes. A made-up character. And how about Don Juan, gentlemen? We have all heard the phrase, he's a regular Don Juan, by which we mean he's given to irregularities. Mr.?
I'm going to guess again.
There you go.
Yes, he was not made up.
You mean he was real? Don't confuse me. He was real. You're very good at this, Mr. Adams. He was real.
I didn't think you'd ask me if it was otherwise.
He was a real fellow, Don Juan Tenorio, who lived in Seville, I think, in the 14th century, and apparently did at least a moderate proportion of the number of exploits that are credited to him in the various plays and operas. Mr. Taylor?
I was just whistling.
We're just whistling. All right. That gives us 4 out of 4, 2 of which were got legitimately and 2 caught by Mr. Adams. The next one from Mr. Mildred A. Massback of New York City. About time I stumped you, gentlemen. I'm going to ask you to perform a very pleasant duty now. Make up a cocktail or highball, gentlemen, containing 4 ingredients found in the titles of books or songs. Mr. Krause.
Gin and bitters.
Gin and bitters. Very good. A title of a book by?
Somerset Maugham.
Somerset Maugham. That gives us 2 ingredients. Now we have to get at least 2 more. Mr. Adams?
Cakes and ale.
Cakes and ale. By Somerset Maugham. But I don't think you'd find ale in either a highball or a cocktail, would you?
You'd find it in a shandy gaff.
I'd rather put...
You would, but it wouldn't be a highball and it wouldn't be a cocktail. Do you mind if I
put the cakes
out?
In the cocktail?
Pardon me?
I'd rather put the cakes in the cocktail than the ale.
How about it, Mr. Kieran?
Well, Burns has a poem about how the valiant Scott soldiers take off their whiskey.
What's the title of the poem? It has to be in the title.
Oh.
Mr. Krause.
Coming Through the Rye.
Coming Through the Rye. Yes, that's a very good one. That gives us a rye.
Could it be a book title?
Couldn't be a title of a book, song.
Young Man of Manhattan.
Sure, that gives us a complete cocktail. I can think of a number of others. Let's see. Ruskin wrote something called Crown of Wild Olive or Olives. That sometimes goes in a cocktail. The Cherry Orchard by Chekhov. Can you think of any title with the soda in it? Most highballs are made with soda. Mr. Krause.
And Soda Bed.
All right. Very good. Mr. Taylor is shaking hands with Mr. Krause. Mr. Krause is shaking hands with Mr. Taylor. They've just retired to their respective corners. Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum would be another one. Which, by the way, brings up a bitter subject. Remember, Mr. Adams, you corrected me sharply last week when I said that Yo-Ho-Ho and a Bottle of Rum came from Robert Louis Stevenson? And Mr. Kieran did the same thing?
I heard him.
Mr. Kieran?
I heard him.
Who wrote it?
Robert Louis Stevenson wrote part of it, and the rest of it was written by young E. Allison.
Yes, but who wrote those particular lines? Yo-Ho-Ho and a Bottle of Rum.
R.L. Stevenson.
R.L. Stevenson is right. And Mr. Allison, an American poet, apparently picked up those 3 or 4 lines which are in Stevenson, and 10 years later wrote a long and apparently very good poem in which the lines reoccur. But I think Stevenson is responsible for the original 3 or 4 famous lines that we
That's
all know.
Right, I looked it up myself.
We got a lot of letters on that. Mr. Kieran, is this news to you?
Yes, it is.
Well, that's the first time it's happened on this program. So we were right, and Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams were wrong by a hair's breadth. Now, how about this question from Francis Zager of Hamilton, Ontario, Canada? Get 2 out of 3. Name the marshal who commands the army defending each of these sectors of the Russian front. You can spell them if you wish. The northern sector. Russian marshal commanding the northern sector. Mr. Krause.
I'll give you the other two if somebody else will give you the North.
Never mind. We'll come to you. Let's get the North first. Maybe you want to go home now, Mr. Krause.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Something like Budini or whatever the name of it is.
That's the what?
Budini is Southern.
Budini is Southern, Mr. Krause. That's right. We've got to get the Northern. Clementi Voroshilov, roughly speaking. Then how about the central area, Mr. Krause?
That Irishman, Tim Oshenko.
Yes, that's right. Semyon Timoshenko. Well, that gives us two out of three. How about this one from Mrs. Teg C. Grundahl of San Francisco? Again, get two out of three if you can. What character of poetry or fiction, gentlemen? This is about drinks. Needed an extra drink for artistic inspiration. What character needed an extra drink for artistic inspiration? Mr. Kieran.
I think the one who drew the face on the barroom floor.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. That's right. Remember the lines in which he
requested
the drink?
Give us a drink, bartender.
Pardon?
Give us a drink, bartender.
Yes, how tenderly you say it, Mr. Say, boys, if you give me just another whiskey, I'll be glad, and I'll draw right here a picture of the face that drove me mad. Remember that now, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Kieran?
Oh, thank you, yeah.
That was very good, Mr. Kieran. Now, how about this one? A character who was refused a drink in a pub. Refused a drink in a pub, Mr. Kieran.
Tommy Atkins.
Maybe you can give us the lines on that.
Gosh, you'd have to start.
We want no redcoats here.
Went into a public house. How does the...
To get a glass of beer.
Go ahead, Alto. And
publicly up and said, we want no redcoats
here. That's right. Kipling's Tommy. And what character took only one drink in 20 years? We'd like to end this question on a moral note, Mr. Adams.
R.V. Winkle.
R.V. Winkle, yeah. Why did he take only one drink in 20 years, Adams?
Because evidently it was too potent.
Yes, he was asleep during the entire 20 years. Well, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $0 and 0 cents of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now here's Mr. Krause with another bulletin from below the Mason-Dixon line.
This is a report from Whiteville, North Carolina, where the 1941 tobacco auctions began last Tuesday. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, Lucky Strike paid the price to get the kind of tobacco you smokers like best. For on August 12th, opening day of this year's auctions at Whiteville, the American Tobacco Company paid 27% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 27% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought goes into Lucky's. Well, smokers, that's but one example of what happens at market after market, year after year. We consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf, the kind that makes Lucky's a milder, better-tasting cigarette. Mr. Fadiman, have I demonstrated that Lucky Strike means fine tobacco?
Amply proved and fully documented, Mr. Krause, and in just 55 seconds. Now, I don't know whether it's you, gentlemen, your own brilliance, or the fact that the questions are easy this evening, but so far we've rung up nothing on you. How do you like that, Mr. Krause?
Oh, I think that's lovely, but I'd like to go home now.
Well, maybe we can fix you up. We ought to see if we can lose at least $50 tonight. Wouldn't be fair otherwise. Here's one from Pauline Salzman of Grand Rapids, Michigan. What articles of wearing apparel, gentlemen, do the following pieces of music that you're now going to listen to suggest? They're going to be three different pieces of music. We have to get... two out of three. What wearing apparel does each suggest? Let's have the first. Mr. Taylor, Mr. Adams are continuing the music in their own peculiar way.
Oh, wait a minute. Captain's daughter.
No, it's a pinafore.
Well, which is it, gentlemen?
Made and fair to see.
That's it.
Pinafore?
Yeah.
All right. And what article of clothing?
Pinafore.
Wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful.
All right. Yes. And what, Mr. Taylor, is a pinafore?
It's an apron that little girls wear.
Yes. I suppose it could be worn by big girls, too.
Well, it's kind of a bibbish thing.
Protects the front part of the dress. Sort of a little low-necked, sleeveless apron. Very good. Now, how about the second selection? Kieran?
A scarf. A Chaminade scarf dance.
Attaboy, Mr. Kieran. That's exactly right. Chaminade scarf dance. And the third. Mr. Taylor?
Pure guesswork. The Queen's lace handkerchief.
What is that?
It's an opera.
No, that's wrong.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
But it's very interesting.
It's an interesting game.
Yeah. No, what was being played is the Mexican hat dance by somebody named Particilla.
Oh, that's nonsense.
No? You want to play it again?
No.
Seems to be true, so that would recall to you what sort of article it was.
Mexican hat.
Ah, boy, Mr.
That gives us 2 out of 3.
You can't keep a secret from you, boy.
Here's one from Max Leibman of New Haven. Get 3 out of 4 on this, gentlemen. Now, I'm going to give you the title of a novel or play. And you're to name one character from some other work to whom this title would be appropriate. I'll give you an example. I noticed, Mr. Adams, that you seem a little confused. For instance, if I named The Miser, which is a play by Molière, that would also be a suitable title for the character Silas Marner. Is that what you were going to say, Mr. Adams?
I was.
I thought you were guessing. Here are the questions. The title is The Man Who Came Back. Now, can you name another character, not from that play, to whom that title would be appropriate, Mr. Krauss?
Enoch Arden.
Enoch Arden is a very good one. Do you have another one in mind, Mr. Taylor?
I have his brother, Enoch.
Mr. Kieran?
The Return of Peter Grimm.
The Return of Peter Grimm would be a very good one. Peter Grimm is the answer. Edmond Dantes makes a return, doesn't he, Mr. Kieran?
Indeed he does.
And
I didn't know he was bad.
The statue of Mr. Taylor in Don Giovanni returns... I think.
Yes.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how about the title, The Lower Depths, a play by Gorky? To what other character from some other play or novel would the word The Lower Depths apply, Mr. Adams?
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
The character would be?
Forget his name.
Captain Nemo. Yes, Captain Nemo. That's a very good one. Think of any others. Mr. Taylor,
The Hairy Ape.
The Hairy Ape, The Lower Depths?
Yes,
very good.
Stalker.
Mr. Taylor, you had something to do, or did you have anything to do with Pinocchio?
I went to see it.
That's what I meant. Well, Pinocchio has a sequence in which Pinocchio is in the lower depths of the ocean. And how about Little Men? Some other characters to whom the phrase Little Men would apply, Mr. Kieran.
Kingsley's Water Babies.
Kingsley's Water Babies, very good. Hadn't thought of that. It's a very good one. Mr.
Tom.
Pardon?
Tom Thumb.
Tom Thumb, yes. Pop of My Thumb, Tom Thumb, any of the Thumb family.
Mr. Singer's Midgets.
Singer's Midgets are not fictional characters.
But they're plural.
they're plural, but they're real. Mr. Kieran.
A Voyage to Lilliput.
Yeah, the Lilliputians in Gulliver's Travels, as Mr. Kieran says. Now, how about, this is a title that you'll recollect with some pleasure, Mr. Krauss, Life with Father. Life with Father. Now, can you give us another character?
Let's talk about that for a while.
To whom the Life with Father might apply, Mr. Taylor.
How about Leglon?
Leglon? Napoleon's little son?
Yeah, he met his father once.
That's right. He didn't pass much of his life with him.
No.
That's the whole point, isn't it?
Well, it was part of a life with father.
All right.
Yeah, well, that's...
Oh, you've out-argued me. Elizabeth Barrett. Mr. Kieran?
The Aeneid.
The Aeneas. That's very good. Yes, Aeneas and old Anchises.
He carried him off on his back.
That's right. That's a very good one. Richard Miller, the son, in O'Neill's play Our Wilderness. That might apply to him.
The one about Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
Yes, that would be a very good one, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran.
Sorrel and son.
Sorrel and son. Very good.
Dombey and son.
We're getting on. All right. We'll drop that one. How about this one? This comes from John Robertson of Birmingham, Michigan. Get 4 out of 5. Now, if the next king of England, gentlemen, were to be called William, James, Charles, Richard, or Albert, what number would each be? We'll begin with William. What number would it be in the succession? Mr. Kieran.
William the Fifth.
William the Fifth is exactly right. Now, suppose the names name was James. That would be James the what? Mr. Kieran?
It would be James the Third of England.
James the Third of England is quite right. Now, suppose the name were Charles. The rest of you gentlemen are entitled to come in on this, you know. Mr. Adams?
Third.
Charles III, was that a guess?
No.
Charles III. All right, that's exactly right. Now, how about Richard? Mr. Kieran?
Richard the Fourth.
Richard the Fourth. And finally, Albert. Albert?
Albert.
Albert
the First.
Albert the First, Mr. Taylor, is right. Was there ever a King Albert?
No, there was a consort.
A consort of Queen Victoria. But there's never been a King Albert in England. That gives us 5 out of 5. How about this one from J.P. Corrigan of Cleveland? Get 2 out of 3. This is about lawyers, gentlemen, of literature and the movies. This lawyer won an acquittal by buying the evidence. Who was that? Mr. Taylor.
He was the lawyer in the letter.
Yes.
By Somerset
right.
Maugham.
That's exactly right. I wouldn't expect you to remember the name, Mr. Taylor.
No, James Stevenson was the actor who played it.
That's right, and a very good job it was.
Yes.
The name of the character was Joyce, who played the part of the lawyer in Somerset Maugham's The Letter, as Mr. Taylor says. Now, this lawyer walked on the ceiling during an investigation. Believe it or not. This lawyer walked on the ceiling during an investigation. Do you remember who that was? Mr. Kieran?
I think that was in Alice in Wonderland.
No, I don't think so. Mr. Taylor? Mr. Adams?
I think that was in a Marx Brothers show.
It was indeed.
The lawyer was somebody who was played by Groucho Marx.
That's exactly right. And it was in A Day at the Circus. And he walked on the ceiling, which left marks on the ceiling, Mr. Adams, as you can easily see. That gives us 2 out of 2. How about this one? This lawyer defended the accused for murder and was later proved guilty of the murder himself. Mr. Taylor.
The trial of Mary Dugan.
That's very good. What was the name of the lawyer?
I haven't the remotest idea.
There's no reason why you should remember it. Edward West.
He was left-handed, though. I know that.
That's right. That's the point of the play, wasn't it?
That's right.
You theatrical fellows are quick. Baird Vaez, trial of Mary Dugan. The name of the character was Edward West. That gives us 3 lawyers out of a possible 3, which is plenty. And sends us on to the next question from J.F. Bowen of Stamford, Connecticut. Name 3 of the 4 most widely spoken languages, dialects included. Oh, that's rather an interesting question. 3 of the 4 most widely spoken languages. Mr. Kieran.
French. Keep Spanish.
French is wrong.
It's not one of the most widely spoken.
It is not one of the 4 most widely spoken languages. But you're all right on Spanish. Mr. Taylor, want to...
I said Chinese.
Chinese, yes. Chinese is the most widely spoken language. How many people speak it? Do you know, Mr. Taylor?
Oh, 400 or 500 million.
That's right. 488 million. What a head for figures you have. Well, now we have Chinese and we have Spanish. Now we have to get one more. Mr. Taylor?
Hindustani.
Hindustani?
Arabic.
Now, that would be wrong. Right. I guess we're going to lose $25 on this one. Mr. Adams?
I would guess Portuguese.
And you would be wrong.
How about English?
Yes. What's the matter with good old English? About 250 million people speak English.
You wouldn't
think it. And,
approximately.
Second to the Chinese. Mr. Kieran?
Well, I said French because before this late trouble, the French had the greatest colonial empire in the world.
That's quite true.
Apparently, it's sparsely populated.
Yes, well, that's it. There weren't not so very many people spoke the French language, though they did have a wide colonial empire. I think we're going to lose $25 on that one. Plus the set of the encyclopedia. I'm going to give you the exact order, so as you may remember this. Chinese is most widely spoken. English, Russian is the 3rd. 166 million people speak and even pronounce Russian. And Spanish is the 4th. And all of the languages, gentlemen, are spoken by a mere minority of 216 million people. Hardly worthwhile mentioning. Here's one from Gretchen Rudiger of Altadena, California. Get 3 out of 4. This is a light-minded question, gentlemen. What heroine of fiction vamped the boyfriend of each of the following ladies? You know what the word vamp means, Mr. Adams?
No, sir.
I guess you're just out of this, then. The first is Honey Wilkes. What heroine vamped Honey Wilkes's boyfriend? Any idea?
Didn't know she had one.
You hardly know.
I don't even know Honey.
Stick around, Mr. Adams. I'm going to tell you all about it. It's in Gone with the Wind. Scarlett O'Hara took away her boyfriend, Charles Hamilton, from her. Remember that now?
But so early.
Well, it happened pretty early in the picture, but a good many people come in.
About page 400 and something.
A good many people see the front part of the picture.
The opening of the book.
That's one wrong. That means you have to get the next 3 right. Who took away the boyfriend of Amelia Sedley? At least temporarily. Mr. Kieran.
Becky Sharp,
yes. What was the name of Amelia's husband?
Amelia's husband's name was
George.
Joseph.
Wasn't it George Osborne?
George Osborne,
yeah. What was your guess, Mr. Adams?
I was thinking of Joseph Sedley.
That's the brother.
Well, you're failing here. How about Brunhilde? Who took away Brunhilde's boyfriend?
I didn't.
No one's been accusing you, Mr. Adams. Mr.
What's her name?
That's the whole point of the question.
Yeah. No. It's Huggins' sister. Oh, shucks.
Shucks is not it.
Nothing
else. No, it isn't Shucks. I know that one.
Shucks is in there somewhere.
No, I don't think Shucks comes in at all. No.
Isn't Floss Hilda?
Who?
Gudruna.
Yeah, that's right. Gudruna. That's right. Got Siegfried while he was under a spell.
Oh.
And how about... Very good, Mr. Taylor. How about Rosaline? Who took away Rosaline's boyfriend?
Dark Rosaline?
I don't know what her complexion is.
I know.
Mr. Curie.
Teacher, I know. Juliet.
Juliet, yes. I bet hardly anybody remembers Rosaline. Is she a character in the play?
Yes, in the beginning.
Does she appear?
They pronounced it Rosaline to rhyme with brine. Well,
I
said, oh, what a deal of brine has washed thy cheeks for Rosaline.
Well, that's set
the point. Take the lead.
Well, if you'd said Rosaline,
yeah,
it would have been altogether
different.
Sure. All right, see what you can do with this one. In what, this is one from Richard M. Westwood of Washington. Get 2 out of 3. In what place would you find the following? Pie, stick, stone, and rule. Where would you find those things? Pie, stick, stone, and rule. Mr. Krause.
In a printing shop.
Right. Professor, coachman, spinner. Where would you find those? Mr. Curran.
In fishing tackle.
What do their names mean?
Well, a coachman is a fly, a spinner is the twirling thing, the glittering, to attract the attention of the fish. And what's the other thing?
Professor?
Oh, I believe that's a fly, too.
Yes, that's right. You find them all in the fishing store. Perfect response, Mr. Curran. How about this one? Dolly, Gobo, Boom, Iris. Mr. Taylor.
Motion picture studio.
Yes, Dolly is what?
A dolly is a platform with wheels on it.
Yes, and a Gobo?
A gobo is a gobo.
Correct. That's right. It's a little black screen used to dull the glare, and a boom is a long crane, and iris is a device inside a lens. And now Mr. Cross points out that an information please program with tobacco experts as quizzes could be very interesting.
They'd be mighty hard to stump, Mr. Fadiman. You see, tobacco experts know their own subject, tobacco, from A to Z. At the auctions, they see who buys what leaf, the quality, prices paid. They really know the answer to any question you might ask. Well, if one of your questions were, what cigarette do independent tobacco experts prefer for their own smoking enjoyment? The answer would be Lucky's by an overwhelming majority. For experts know it's the tobacco that counts, and they see us pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. For example, last season, the American Tobacco Company paid 22% more than the market average at Henderson, North Carolina, 34% more at Brookneal, Virginia, and so on at market after market. And the best we bought goes into Lucky's. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. That's why with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Smokers, just remember this. Better tobacco makes a better cigarette. Next time, ask for Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Lucky Strike thanks you, Mr. Krause, and Mr. Taylor, you go home now, Mr. Krause, for your noble efforts this evening. Next week, the tried and true trio, Levant, Adams, and Kieran, will be back, and our guest will be the well-known novelist and writer of short stories, Faith Baldwin, whose latest novel is called Temporary Address Reno. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.